Cyberhooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 35th episode of Cyberhooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos, and I'm broadcasting live from my home here in Harrisburg, South Dakota. It's great to be back with you all. Felt like a long week. Maybe it's because I'm feeling guilty that I didn't get any holiday shopping done. I'm sure you're all out there, you know, completely ready for the holidays, but I am not. Okay, before I get to the show today, I thought I'd give you all an update on the podcaster throwdown for Halos of Hope. So in case you missed this on the Naughty Girls Knitcast podcast last week, there is an additional way to earn hat points for your team. A $5 donation to your team equals one virtual hat point toward your team's final bragging rights for the throwdown. So for those of you who are just too busy with your holiday knitting to get a hat done for the throwdown, here's another way you can participate. You can read more about this up on the halosofhope.org blog, and there's some links there to get you to the store so you can participate. Again, for you team members that have not been able to dig in with your needles or your crochet hooks, you know, you can buy your way out a little bit. But we're still needing those hats, so don't give up on the hats. The money raised through the Halos of Hope website will be used to offset the shipping costs for the hats we're collecting for this campaign. So now we have actual hats and virtual hats to count for the throwdown. According to Nathaniel Alpha from Pearlescence Yarns on Sunday and Pam Hashke from Hills of Hope also Sunday, the team Knitmore Girls still has a lead on the other teams, but the Team Sockaholic team is giving them a run for their money. Here are the counts so far. Team Knitmore Girls, there are 145 actual hats and 19 virtual hats for a total of 164 for that team. Team Naughty Girls is 52 actual hats, 19 virtual hats for a total of 71 for that team. Team Craftlit has 14 actual hats, 3 virtual hats for a total of 17 for that team. Team Sockaholic has 109 actual hats and 14 virtual hats for a total of 123 for that team. And Team Ready, Set, Knit has no virtual hats, but they do have 40 actual hats. So there are now 61 additional virtual hat points for the teams, and that allowed us to raise $305, and that $305 will actually allow us to ship 983 hats. So good job, all. For all of you other Fiber Arts podcasters, please consider joining the Rumble. We'd love to have you create your own teams or join one of the existing teams for this great charity campaign. And please keep listening to Cyberhooligan. We'll try to have updates about this at the top of every show. Okay, this is going to be a fun show today. My guest today is a very talented artist, dyer, and, of course, the owner of Miss Babs Hand-Dyed Yarns and Fibers in Mount City, Tennessee. The original business, Miss Babs, was started in 2003. In 2005, the business morphed into Miss Babs Hand-Dyed Yarns and Fibers as she developed the business and found that placing color on yarn and fiber had become her core focus. And so she moved to that as her full-time passion and occupation. She's had a long and varied work experience, which we'll talk about on the show, all of which have led her to her current vocation. She combines the best attributes of artist and entrepreneur, and her fibers and team are beloved by knitters, crocheters, and spinners from around the world. I am so pleased to have her on the show today. I am speaking of Babs Osherman. Babs joins us from Mountain City, Tennessee. Good morning, Ms. Babs, and welcome to the show.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm very well. I guess it's afternoon there right now.
It is. It just turned afternoon.
It's what happens when I do these darn East Coasters, but it's okay because, you know, maybe Tennessee is on the East Coast. Well, you know, it's just in the Eastern time zone. Yeah, I don't think you guys think of yourself as East Coasters down in Tennessee, do you?
Well, I sure do because I'm all the way east in Tennessee.
Oh.
We're almost into North Carolina, so we're only 6 hours from the ocean where I am. So
is that mitigating the weather at all? I saw a picture online of your place look pretty snowed in.
Well, we've got a little snow right now, but it'll go away. But because we're in the mountains, we do tend to get snow when other places around us don't. So.
I understand. So not too bad this weekend then.
That's right. Little ice, and then that's all melted off by now. And we actually, the sun has come out, for which we're very grateful. And so it was a rainy, dreary weekend. So the sun is nice to see again. So.
Yes, absolutely. So you heard me confess at the top of the show that I'm feeling guilty that I've done almost no Christmas shopping. Have you gotten all yours done?
And I've done some. I've done gift cards.
Gift cards.
Yes. And, of course, that's what the grandkids these days. So that's what I've gotten. And
okay.
I did take care of some things for my husband that aren't gift cards. So I'm actually done.
Well, my dear wife, Krista, and my daughter Samantha went out yesterday, and I think they're about done, which leaves me in the awkward position of being probably the only one in the house that isn't done. So it's going to be an interesting week for me. We'll see how that gets done. Okay, but enough talking about all that stuff. Let's get to you. You know, in our pre-interview, which I really enjoyed, you told me so many fascinating things about you, and I think the only way to proceed is kind of in a linear fashion. So let's give our listeners a little background about you. You learned to knit at a very early age. Will you tell us about that?
Sure. I actually started sewing at probably age 4 and started knitting about age 6. I never was one to play with dolls, but I certainly enjoyed making clothes and that sort of thing for my dolls. I also, because I was the youngest member of my family, I started having nieces and nephews at a very young age, and so I started knitting for them. And my mother and both grandmothers were knitters, so it just was sort of a normal progression for me to learn how to knit. It just seemed very interesting to me. And textiles have been, you know, fibers and textiles have always spoken to me.
Well, and I know that you come from a family of artists as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a couple of brothers that are glass blowers and sculptors, and a sister that was a potter, and so on. And then there's others in the next generation that are also sculptors and designers and so on. I was brought up around design and just all sorts of things going on. And I guess the thing for me was that at a young age, I was sort of nervous about trying to be artistic because I had so many siblings that were. And so it took a while for that part to come out in my own personal experience. I didn't start doing watercolor till later in life. And then we'll go on and talk about how I got back into knitting again later on in life. But yes. Lots of people in my family are artists.
That, and whereabouts? I think I understand that you grew up in the Midwest, and of course I'm from the Midwest, so I'm just kind of curious whereabouts are you from here?
I am from Southern Illinois, and you know when you tell people that you're from Illinois, they always say, "Oh, near Chicago," and it's like, no, there is actually another part of Illinois. I actually grew up across the river from St. Louis. So I came from Alton, Illinois, which is a river town. And so I was exposed to very Midwestern culture. And Midwesterners are very strong workers. In my experience, they're seem to be easy to get along with most of the time. I always enjoy coming back to Stitches Midwest because it's like coming home. Because the Midwesterners, a lot of Midwesterners. So.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess I've lived in different places, and I find charm everywhere. I
right.
I lived in Canada for a while. I really have to, actually I have to tell you, I completely enjoy, and it was an acquired taste, but I really enjoy the South now. I am just enamored by the South. I didn't have a lot of experience with them until we started working with the Atlanta Knitting Guild down for Stitches South, and we've been doing that for a couple of years now. And some of those ladies are some of my best friends now. I'm really enamored with the South, but I do know what you're saying about the Midwest.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do like the South. I live here. Absolutely.
Well, and you must have liked at least some of the South, because I think you married a Southerner.
Absolutely. Yeah, I met my husband in Asheville, North Carolina, and where I was going to school to be a chef. And it was love at first sight, and we've never been apart since then, actually. So one of the humorous stories, I suppose, is that I have a yarn used to be called Windsor. We've changed to Mills at Forest, and we now call it Cosmic. Windsor is my husband's middle name, and Cosmic is the name of the where we met, which was the Cosmic Ballroom. So I do try to bring in my personal experience into what happens here as well. But yes, my husband also is one to call me Miss Babs, and that's where the name of the business came from.
Yes,
and he,
absolutely.
Yeah, he, and that's a Southern sort of thing that Southerners do. They add the Miss on the name of the, in front of a woman's name often. So that's where that came from, and I thought it was great, and I thought I might as well use it. So,
you know, I think every single time I've actually ever been into your booth at Stitches, I've always called you Miss Babs. I don't think
right.
Anybody told me what your last name is. I think there are a lot of people that don't know what your last name is because people are so used to calling you Miss Babs. I remember
exactly.
In the South, I was with Rick, and Rick called you by name, Miss Babs.
Right.
So I think people are used to that. But we'll get back to your fiber arts story in a minute, because you mentioned a few minutes ago about meeting your husband when you were going to school as a chef. Now, this feeds into the next line of questioning that I want to get into, because you have had an interesting and varied work experience. Can you tell the Fiber Hooligans about your travels and the careers that you've had?
Yes. I've had a number of careers, and I started as thinking that I wanted to be a chef, so I went to cooking school in Asheville, North Carolina, and quickly figured out that in the summer, kitchens were hotter than the 100 degrees it was outside, so I lost my taste for that, and it required very long days on my feet. I think the interesting thing, though, is that I've ended up in a kitchen, and I still have long days on my feet as a result. But after that, after my husband and I got married, I moved into selling real estate, and that was somewhat short-lived. But it taught me a lot. I started my interest in finance and how people acquire things and why they make decisions about doing things, and I've learned about mortgages and so on. After that, we moved back to where I grew up, and I went into the family business, which was an insurance agency. And I did that for 6 or 7 years and did lots of different things with that. But specifically, the most interesting part of the insurance business for me was that I worked with a lot of small business owners during that time, learning about their businesses as we were insuring them and figuring out the kinds of problems and risk that they faced and just learning about small business in general. And of course, I came from a family of, because my father was a small business owner with the insurance agency, and that is part of who I am. So let's see. After that, I sold the business and went back to school. So I did it sort of backwards. I hadn't done college before I went into the insurance agency. But I sold the agency, and my father was in his late 70s at that point, or in his mid-70s at that point. And so it made sense to do that, although he was still working. I went back to school. I got a degree in finance and then got a degree, master's in business with a focus on organization development. I had become interested in how to help organizations be as effective as possible. And a focus of that was how to make it, I don't know what the right word is right this minute, how to make it right for the employees in the organization as well, so that they felt like they could contribute to the effectiveness of the organization. Then, oh my gosh, we got transferred to Florida. And so I got to Florida. There I was with an MBA and had this big job title of having been an owner of a business and so on and so forth, and I was overqualified for everything. This was in the early 90s, and so I couldn't find a job. I took a temporary position with Kelly Services, which I'd done in the past. I think it's probably one of the best things that people can do is take temporary work if they can't find a job otherwise. But I did that and started at a hospital. I was working in the plant services department, which is maintenance, and was doing lots of safety things, which led me, I connected with a lot of people in the organization, and within 2 years, I was director of education in the hospital. So I did that for 4 or 5 years. I did a lot of education, management development, leadership development, and conflict management. And then we took a job. My husband took a job in Tennessee. So we moved to here to Mountain City. He was VP of operations in a medical device manufacturing plant, and I went to not having a job from 60 hours a week to nothing. And so I looked around and found a position, a full-time adjunct position at Appalachian State University, which is over in Boone, North Carolina, just 30 minutes away, and started teaching business and marketing. So that's what I did until I started getting into fibers.
Well, and I think there's a couple of things I want to extract out of this and talk a little bit about before we get into your fiber history. I think the first thing is that it's an interesting phenomenon to me that you do the hard work, you get somewhere, you move, you have to kind of start over, and you've been willing to do that several times.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the hardest things.
No fear of it.
Yeah, but I think it's one of the hardest things that, particularly because in the past, at least, women are the ones that have typically had to take these transfer kinds of impacts and had to try to come figure out, you know, how to occupy, you know, find occupation when they get to a new location. Yeah, you have to recreate your life again.
Yeah, because these are not jobs that you were going to that were just jobs. These were careers, and it seems like every couple of years you needed to just basically figure out how to start a new career, which, you know, and this goes to the second point I want to talk about you. You come from a family where you were raised, and it was a small business. And I know that has a lot to do with the way that you look at the world. You know, my good friend Gene and I always talk that, you know, a 40-hour work week is what we consider part-time, which I know you understand.
Right. Yeah, I absolutely grew up with my father going back to work at the end of the day, most, you know, 3 or 4 days a week, and he got to work early in the morning. And yeah, it is a way of life for me. And it is also, you know, I've always grown up with the idea, okay, so if I'm interested in something, how can I make a buck at it? You know, it's just, that's part of the entrepreneurial approach. How can I make this work? And frankly, I never was really good at working for other people. So, you know, that's that other piece. The other thing that people say is, well, you work for yourself. You can work anytime you want. And as my friend from Three Irish Girls says, you're free, you know, when you're a small business owner, you're free to work any 27 hours of the day that you want, you know, and that's the truth. It's not necessarily a hard way to make a living, but I just enjoy it. Putting out the effort and seeing what comes back. So.
Yeah. Well, okay. The other point, and I'm going to get back to the working thing, because you've done a good job, and we're going to talk about that when we talk about your team. You started in the world basically of finance, and it sounds to me that toward the end you really moved over into the world of marketing, in the education world at least.
Right, I did. I started out thinking that finance, and of course that ties in with the fact that I had the background in insurance, because so much of that ties into finance and risk management and those kinds of things. So that was sort of a natural fit for me to begin with. But I also am very interested in people and what makes them tick and why we all think the way we do and why we make the decisions that we make. And that's a lot of what marketing is why do we make the decisions that we do? When I was teaching at Appalachian State University, I did teach marketing, principles of marketing, for 4 solid years. And that solidified what I had learned solidified my understanding of marketing. And marketing, of course, is not simply advertising. Marketing is, you know, how to put the whole package together, from product to how to get it to the customer, and you know how to distribute and so on. So it really was important. The only piece that I didn't really have was retail, and many of my customers, many of the people who have been in my booth, have met Jen, and Jen is the person who knows my retail stuff. And she has a deep background in retail. So together, it really works pretty well.
I agree. I think it does. And I'm going to talk about your branding a little later. Let's talk about your move into the fiber arts world professionally. Again, we talked about the fact that you got the name of your company from your dear Southern husband. But
right.
How did you begin dyeing? I mean, what was that process like? Was this something that was a hobby of yours before?
Well, I actually, okay, so I hadn't, you know, living in Florida, I really did I did a lot of needlepoint and I did those kinds of things, but I didn't knit when I was down there because it, generally it's pretty warm. But when we moved to Tennessee, I picked knitting back up and crocheting, and then I moved into spinning of all things. I swore that I wasn't going to start spinning, and 2 months later I had a spinning wheel and was spinning. But that is actually the whole spinning piece is why I started moving into the dyeing area, because most of what I spun was undyed wool, and that's all only so interesting. You know, it needs color on it, so I had to figure out how to put some color on that yarn that I had spun. And I received a notice in the on my email from a local Sycamore Shoals State Park about a natural dyeing class that they were workshop that they were going to have, and I thought, well, I'll go do that. And so I went, and it was hot. It was August, but we had fires going and pots over the fire, and we did natural dyeing, and I was absolutely hooked. Just enamored of it in all ways, and came home, started dyeing with natural things, all, you know, started buying rug wool because it was actually some of the cheapest yarn that I could find, just to experiment. And I had my poor husband, I had fires going in the backyard and pots boiling and so on and so forth. I just went crazy. And, you know, at some point you have to start selling it, you know, what you have. I started doing that as well. But this was in about 2002. And in 2003, I started selling on a very low key some yarns. I also, after the natural dyes, I ran into Kool-Aid and Wilton's, and then I went to acid dyes and just went crazy. That's pretty much it. I was still teaching marketing, and then in 2005, they decided they wanted full PhD coverage for their marketing classes. So we parted ways, and I have been dyeing full-time ever since. So that's really sort of how it happened. One of the reasons that I started dyeing full-time in 2005 is that there really are no other – you have to make a job here. There aren't really, in the mountains, in this rural area, there aren't really jobs, that many jobs available. So, you know, that's what I did. I made a job for myself.
Well, and again, this goes back to the entrepreneurial spirit, and you have a passion. How can you turn it? But you said something earlier that this sounds bad. How can you make money out of it? And I disagree with that. We're all capitalists, or
right.
Consumers. And when there's a great line that a friend of mine once told me, where there's no margin, there's no mission. And I truly believe that. There's nothing wrong with giving a good product and a good value and making
right.
a few dollars at it, too. So you were good at this right away. You could tell you were good at this. People liked you. And you went to your first big retail show, and I believe that was a SAF,
Southeastern Animal Fiber Fair near Asheville, North Carolina. Yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, well, I still laugh at myself because about 2 days ahead of time, I realized that I needed to put labels on all this yarn that I had dyed. And, okay, so, you know, it takes longer to do labeling than you think, and than I thought, certainly. It was gratifying, though. I had a friend help me. My husband helped me. It was terrifying, gratifying. I made some money, and what the person who bought my first yarn from me is a woman by the name of Sandy, who's a member of my fiber guild here in the mountains. And it's she bought enough yarn to make me believe that I could believe in myself. And Sandy still comes, still visits. She's an honorary member of the crew. She always makes fun and says that she's the workers' comp police. But she will be at our Christmas luncheon this week. Sandy, you know, for those of you who have ever bought bats for me, when we were doing bats, she did a lot of the combining of the fibers into the bats for me. She's important. But anyway, so the show went well. It didn't go as, you know, I had highs and lows, but I was hooked. You know, another hook. I loved meeting the people.
Yes, yes, and we're going to talk about that because that's a good place for us to go. Before we do that, let's talk about your yarns and fibers, which are extremely popular. And we'll talk about the marketing thing a little bit, but I'd like to talk about the artistry and your color sense, because your fibers are dynamic, and then you see them and they're very sophisticated. And the color range is spectacular. Is this your own color sensibilities that we see in most of your products?
It is. I will. A lot of it is my sensibility. It is, and you know, it really is because I'm not a professionally trained artist. It is about what I see and what I see outside, but it is about. I truly believe it's about how my personal eyes are structured. We all have, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard some, and many women will understand this, and they'll show a color to their husband and they'll say, oh, isn't this a lovely green blue, you know, and they'll say, no, it's just green. And our eyes are all different, and it's about how the rods and the cones are in the eyes. And I feel like I've been given a gift in the structure of my eyes, and because I am able to differentiate very slight differences between colors. And I think that ties into how I create the colors that I do. But I will say this, there are times that Jen, who works with me, will say, oh, you know, we really need to develop a color in this area, or we need a lighter color in this area, either blue or purple or something like that. Some of that is a combination in terms of how I develop colors.
So you get your inspirations all around you, I would imagine.
I do. And a lot of it really starts with the things that I see in the natural world. Plants, green is one of my favorite colors. Purple is another one. And there are a lot of, some flowers out there that have purples in them. And I have a color called squash blossom, and we put it around a squash blossom, and it really is the color of a squash blossom. The same for French marigold. The color is just pretty dead on to what those colors are. But there are other more subtle kinds of connections and color combinations that I see. And different seasons will affect the colors that I enjoy putting together on yarn. So.
Well, and speaking of your yarns, you have, let's talk about your yarns in a little more detail, because you have yarns that, of course, are one of a kind, dyed, beautiful, interesting color combinations, and of course you have what I would consider mostly solid, not
right.
quite a, you know, a solid. Can you tell us about your yarns?
Yeah. So over the years, I've gone from dyeing multicolors to dyeing solids, semi-solids, which I call monochromes, and then going back to the babettes, which are what we call one-of-a-kinds, and those are, they're sort of two different kinds of projects that you would do with the different yarns. With the babettes, they're often great for one skein projects that take advantage of the crazy color combinations and, you know, things like a hitchhiker, Martina Beam's Hitchhiker, and there's lots of one skein projects out there that are good for those. Socks as well. And they're also, then the monochromes are good for sweaters and those sorts of things. One of the reasons that I do different yarns and do different color combinations and all of this is because, you know, it's important to appeal to a very broad market, a very broad to not just me. You know, I don't dye just for myself. And I try, you know, if I was dyeing just for me, they would be greens and purples and not many other colors. But I've learned over the years to create colors all across the color spectrum. And so, you know, that's something that I feel is important. And it's important. You know, one of the things I'm getting ready to do more of are more medium. I have very deep, intense colors a lot of the time. And I have some medium and some light colors, but I'm wanting to build the number of colors that are that medium and light grouping in the near future. So I don't know if that answers the question, but...
Well, it does, and I like that you used the word deep, because I think in our pre-interview you used the word crazy, and I don't consider your colors crazy. Deep and rich, yes, and occasionally
right.
playful, but, you know, I was up on your site, and folks, if you haven't gone up to missbabs.com, you must, because, you know, as my dear old dad said, there's nothing but yarn porn up there. You really will love it. Just cruising through the site is a real fun time. I was struck. And I can't wait to see this in person. I hope you have it at the West. One of your trios, it's called Bruin, Cloak, and Naples, is so sophisticated. I love those colors.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
And if I'm hearing you correctly, that's not necessarily your favorite bunch of colors. I mean, you should like the yarn, but it's not necessarily what you would pick for yourself, maybe.
Right. Well, when we put the trios together in particular, we have different members of the team go and pull different colors and put them together, because, you know, what I would pick is not necessarily what someone else would pick. So we try to reach across color preferences by using different people in the studio to pull those colors for those trios. So, you know, it really isn't just my taste. So,
yeah, your yarns, I see that the trios especially, and again, I'm just going to focus on them because I really did enjoy going through your trios. I hope you don't mind me focusing on them.
That's
fine. It looks to me like they're a combination of merino, silk, and bamboo.
Oh, and they're merino and silk. Those don't have any bamboo in them.
Oh, they don't. Okay.
Yeah. The trios are typically either a superwash merino only or a merino and silk blend. So that there are, those are three skeins together, held together that are useful for projects that use three different colors. One of the most popular projects that people use that for in the past was for the Color Affection shawl. And this past year, Stephen West came out with a design that his mystery knit along that used three colors, and so that was good for that as well. So, I do have a merino, bamboo, and tussa blend, as well as a number of other blends. The blends that I have for my spinning, for spinning fibers, are ones that I personally like and personally spin myself. So that's what those are.
Right. I was actually just about, you took me right there. That's great. So we was going to talk about your fibers because I know that in your yarns, it's a superwash merino, but I believe that in your fibers, if you're spinning, you don't use a superwash or.
Right. I don't use a superwash, and it's primarily because those are the fibers that I really like, and I find that I like the way the colors take. I personally don't enjoy spinning superwash fibers as much as I do the non-superwash. This is one of the areas that I do let my personal preferences play. The other piece that I didn't talk to you about previously is that I've done a fair amount of felting, and so obviously with non-superwash, you can felt, and with, you know, you can't with the superwash fibers. I love felting scarves and those kinds of things with with the merino bamboo and tussa, and with the merino and tussa. It just does really nice things, especially the bamboo acts up in that and adds a flair that you wouldn't get otherwise. So that's what I do there.
Yeah. Well, and gorgeous stuff. So now this allows us to move on to not just my opinion, but the opinion that people have for you. Of course, I've seen you and your crew at shows, and you do a great job on presentation. It takes something special to do a good job at a show because it's very intense, it's very speculative, it can be very stressful. And I know that you have very, very firm policies and strategies toward making yourself successful at a show. Can you talk about your interaction philosophies and your presentation philosophies for shows?
Sure. And you are absolutely correct. It is a stressful activity, getting ready for a show, and also the breakdown when everybody around you is trying to get out of there faster than you can. And anyway, what I am struck by is that, you know, the pop-up stores that people talk about being so hot, that's exactly what we do when we're doing shows, is that we're creating pop-up stores in 2 days or less that will be retail for a short period of time, and then we break down. But as far as our whole approach to the setting up our booths and the shows, a lot of this comes from Jen, who works with me and has worked with me for the last 8 years. She and I try to make or create as close to a real retail kind of experience when we're setting up our booth, including having samples available so people can see how the yarns knit up, and having patterns available that they can knit so they can see how the yarns can be used. In terms of how we are at shows, we clearly have rules about what happens in our booth. We do not sit down when we're in the booth. We stand up. We say hello when people walk into the booth. We give people samples of yarn. And I think one of the important things, and I love this about Jen because, okay, so I'm a dyer, and I have basic knitting skills, and I've knitted a lot. But, you know, at the end of the day, when all is said and done, I can knit, just knit. I don't have any brain power for much anything else. But Jen really has an understanding of yarn and how it knits up. And she has talked to a lot of, many of the people who've been in my booth have talked to Jen. And she will give them input. They'll come into the booth with a pattern, and they'll ask, what do you have that I can knit this pattern with? And she'll take a look at it, and she will be very clear about whether we have a product, a yarn, that will work for them or not. And if we don't have something that will work for them, she will try to help them, you know, steer them to something that will work and tell them that we just don't have something. Because it's really important to us for our customers to be successful in their projects because we need them to be successful. We need, you know, if they don't have a happy experience, then they're not going to come back. And so all of that ties into our approach to how we, you know, talk about our yarns with our customers. So.
Well, and you do a very good job of that. I just have to ask because I've seen your booth at the shows, and they're so pro. I mean, I always stop and look because even on the outside, you know, the way that you configure them, there's some grid toward the outside, but it's not in such a way that you feel closed in. It's just interesting to look at the outside of your booth. There must have been a bit of a learning curve for you to get to that point.
Absolutely. The setup of our booth has been progressive and definitely been we've made the space too small sometimes by trying to put too much into smaller space. And what we find is that, you know, you have to leave room for people to walk around. And we used to have only the racks that the yarn hung on, and now we've added grid with the hooks on them because that adds a different visual interest. And for some yarns, it's a better way for them to be presented because of, like, alpaca is a very heavy yarn, and it does better when it's hung upside down by the butt kind of thing. It's just things that we've learned. Yes. And, you know, it's just not, you know, we find, you know, you try to find things that draw people in and make them enjoy the pleasure of looking at the yarn.
That's a great answer, and it's a perfect segue into the next question that I have with you, because, again, I remember specifically being at Stitches South this last year and being in your booth with Rick Mondragon, who is the editor of our magazine and who loves your colors. He was doing some shopping for some work he was going to do on something else. And I remember people walking around and smiling, touching everything. And, you know, it's not the first time that I noticed. You have real fans. I mean, you have people that are Miss Babs people. You know, you can see the love on your customers' faces. And what's that like?
It's incredibly gratifying. And it's something that I sometimes find difficult to talk about simply because, you know, I was brought up not to speak well of myself, you know. But it's incredibly gratifying that people like the colors, and tell us how much they enjoy the yarn and, you know, so on. It's just, I am still amazed even as the years go by. I'm still amazed.
You know, I continually hear it. I was listening to Jen and Laura on the Naughty Girls Knitcast the other day, and they were, you know, anticipating Stitches West and getting ready and talking about their plans and their shopping strategy. They decided they're going to get some extra booth coverage in the booth on Thursday night, the preview night, because last year they did not get a chance to go buy Babs, and they're not going to let that happen again. And Laura's a hand dyer. It's not like she doesn't have fiber lying around, but you know, what you guys are doing and the way you're doing it is obviously affecting people at a really pretty visceral level.
And that's pretty important to me because, when I started knitting again and started playing with color, you know, what I came to understand about yarn is that it is, for me, what I have called soul candy, because there's, you know, you touch the yarn with your hand, so you have the tactile thing. Then you have the visual as the yarn slips through your hands. Your eyes look at it, and it feeds the eyes as well. So it really is important, you know, that it's not just coming up with the end result. It's, for many of us, the process of knitting. It is the process of crochet. It is the process of working with the yarn. And if that's the effect that I'm having, then that's wonderful.
Well,
because
I
get affected
that
way as well.
Yeah, I know you are. But it's not just the beautiful fibers and the great presentation. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your business philosophies, the way you do business, and the way you present yourself from a business side. I know that you and your crew are incredibly disciplined, and I really like what you have written on your website. I'd like to read it and ask you to talk a little bit about this, please. It states on your website, "The Women of Miss Babs. Miss Babs Hand-Dyed Yarns and Fibers is a woman-owned business employing like-minded group of women who are hardworking and often hard-talking. We like loud music, telling our stories, and the truth, supporting each other, sharing tears and laughter, all the while getting a good day's worth of work done. While diverse in our political beliefs, we do not talk politics here, we clearly enjoy each other's company. We join together to get things done and are proud of our accomplishments. Four of us are the primary or only breadwinners in our households. For the rest of us, it is an important component to the family income. We do not take the success of the business lightly." I don't think that I've ever heard or read anything like that on another website, and I have to tell you, I loved it.
Thank you. It's important to us. I had a woman, I hired another woman this fall who's been with us since, it was September, I guess. I hired her for 2 weeks and she's been here since then, which is the way people, you know, that's the way I think, oh, it'll just be 2 weeks and then, you know, it lasts. But she said to me today as I was, we were talking about some things, and she said, you know, I love it here. I think I was dying at home. And, because we do production work, we have a good time. We have to enjoy ourselves. But it is important that we work together. One of the things I talked about earlier is that I did organization development, and a lot of that is team building and that sort of thing. Lots of people have gone to team building through team building exercises and so on and so forth. We do team building regularly as we get ready for shows. We have to push together. We have
a goal that we have to achieve, and then we're done. You know, we manage it, we get there, and we all feel successful when we've achieved it. And everybody's a part of it. Today's Monday. This morning we had a Monday morning meeting. Everybody was there from every position because everybody needs to know what's going on in the business because everybody is important to the business. I can't achieve what the business needs to do without them. They, you know, I am part of the production team, but they are, you know, we're all together. And if we all don't pull together, you know, it affects everybody else's income. So, you know, and they're really clear about that, and I'm really clear about that. We also don't tolerate people standing around, and it's funny because, you know, I'm often very busy, and I've got other people who will say, hey, get to it, and, you know, everybody does that to everybody else here. So it's a, you know, we're a good group, and, you know, we give each other, trouble, so to speak. We give each other fun. We, you know, we just have a good time, and we work hard.
So. You do, and you present yourself well. I mean, it, you know, in everything there's always slip-ups, but it is always so. And again, you can tell it's disciplined. You can tell it's disciplined. But you don't get people in your booth that are doing a good job with customers unless they're also happy. So I know you're doing that as well. Your entire presence at shows and through social media and on your website is all so professional, yet it's not professional in what I would call a corporate way. You seem to put the care into things, and you seem to make things approachable, and it comes across as a very personal experience, and this has to be by design.
Absolutely. The thing is that I'm selling a hand-dyed product, a handmade product, and so that doesn't mean that it needs to look sloppy, but it means that people need to know that my hands were on it and somebody else's hands were on it. And that, in fact, is one of the reasons that we still hand print all of the yarn names on the labels, because I want people to know that somebody actually handled that skein. So, yes, part of how I present so that all the skeins look essentially the same is part of that appearance, you know, in terms of how they're twisted. I want a very neat appearance, but people need to know that it was hand done. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's great. And again, the color sense, the logo design, I mean, it's all good, but it's not that corporate-looking thing. And, you know, it comes across as very approachable. Your social media does that, too. You can tell that there's some hands-on with the way that you folks are doing. My guess is that you're at least one of the people that handles some of your social media.
Yeah, I do a fair amount of it. Jen does some of it, and then I've got a couple of other people who do some of the writing for me, simply because while I'm a good writer, it takes a lot of time in my day, so I'll flesh out some of what I want to say, but there are times when I let other people just take it and run with it. You know, they've all been working with me long enough to know basically our philosophy. They've helped me come up with some of the philosophy, and they're fully capable of implementing some of that. So it's
yeah,
shared.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I just keep coming across with it, and there's all these great ideas, and I love the look and the feel of everything that it is you do. I'm subscribe to your newsletter, of course, and this is, I love getting your newsletter because, again, it's just a friendly-looking newsletter. I get a lot of them. And, oh, by the way, Fiber Hooligans, I really encourage you to go up to missbabs.com and get you signed up for that, get yourself signed up for that newsletter. They don't overdo newsletters, and that typically and their Facebook page are the way that they talk about new and cool stuff. So get yourself up there. Anyway, back to the point. I was sitting at home, and I got an e-newsletter that I received, and it was talking about your knitting tour, which I think is brilliant. You must tell the Fiber Hooligans about your knitting tour, because it's a virtual tour, and how does it work?
Yeah, okay. So about 3 years ago, one of the gals who works for me part-time, we were trying to figure out how we would like to do, because we knew we wanted to do a knitting club, and she had this idea that trying to figure out doing a knitting club that had destinations. And so our knitting tour is designed for the armchair traveler. It's virtual travel, and each year we go to four destinations, and we pick and select, or I develop colors, and I have a designer for each destination. We develop colors and designs that are intended to be evocative of the location that we're going to. So a year ago at this time, we went to Berlin with Martina Beam. And she developed a pattern called Brickless, and the color I developed was called Berlin. And the way I developed the color was to think of, or I saw pictures of Berlin at night. So it's actually, it has some really bright colors and is meant to be evocative of those neon lights and the dark building, and her pattern was based on the construction that's going on in Berlin, that is Brickless. So this year we've got four projects and four destinations, and we won't tell you what they are or where we're going, but we will tell you that we're going to use fingering or heavy lace weight yarn. And our goal with the club has always been to expand advanced beginner skills and to be a pleasurable knit for those that have more advanced knitting skills. So that's really sort of the trip in a nutshell.
I love the idea that they're signing up for a tour. It starts from, you basically sign up from where you're from.
Right.
And you sign up for it sight unseen. You don't get to know what your tour is all about until you just tell them.
Right. Exactly. And we include with the tour, we send a booklet of information about where we're going, including flora and fauna, menus, hotels that we're going to stay at, tours that we're going to take, knitting stores that are available, and, of course, the pattern as well. We also include little piece of candy or two that is evocative of the area and, a few other what I call Circes, little gifts that are related to the travel.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So this year, who are your designers that you're working with?
The designers we're working with this year are Debbie Stone and Leah Victoria, both of whom are relatively new designers, Ann Weaver and Joji Locatelli are our designers this year. So it should be an exciting year.
It should be a very exciting year. So what else are you working on these days?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so recently I've developed some gradients, and I'm getting ready to expand what I'm doing with gradients so that the colors will cross from one color family over to another. We're developing some more, like I said earlier, more monochromes in some of the lighter colors. Let's see. And what we're really started on is simply building our inventory to get ready for Stitches West, which is coming up sooner than everybody can imagine, because we have to ship right at the beginning of February. So we basically have to be ready to go and send everything for Stitches West by then. And that's a fair amount of yarn.
It is a fair amount of yarn. And hopefully you won't have to bring any of it back. That's what I'm going to say. And for folks that are going to Stitches West, I wanted to remind you that Miss Babs and Miss Babs Gang will be in booths 724, 726, 823, and 825. And you can find them on the floor.
Yes, we'll be there. And it's the Stitches West setup is one of our hardest because we store all of our racks out there, and so we ship the yarn, actually merchandise the yarn here on racks, pack it into boxes, so when we get there and we've built the racks, we can just pull the yarn out and put it up onto the racks in order. Otherwise, it would be crazy. But we have to build the racks and be ready for Thursday night at 5 o'clock. So it's the other reason I love Stitches West is that generally it's been white here for a month or more, and it's green out in San Jose. In Santa Clara.
Yeah,
so
I don't mind
a nice
going to
change.
I don't mind going to California about that time of the year either. But yeah, it is a hard job, and we know at least that Laura and Jen are coming to buy some stuff from you on Thursday night. So at least you got two customers
right.
to look forward. My guess is you might have a few more than that. So we're coming down close to the end of this. And are there any shout outs you'd like to give to anybody?
I just, not that my husband will necessarily listen, but, you know, it is. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be able to have done the things that I've done. He's been a true partner through the years. And but I did want to share one thing. You said if there was some little profound thing that I might could share. I thought of something that a good friend of ours told us a number of years ago, and it has everything to do with what I do today, I suppose. But there's four things you need to be happy. One is, and that it's not in any particular order, it's all of these. You have to have all of these. One is a job you enjoy doing. Two, you need to live where you want to live. Three, you need to live with the one you love the most. Four, you need to make enough money to be comfortable. And if any of these is out of balance, then that's what you've got to work on. And it's been something I've lived by for quite a while, and it's been important to me. So that's what I thought I'd share.
Well, that's wonderful. I really do appreciate it, and I really do appreciate your time. I know Monday's a busy day for you. I want to thank you for joining us today, Babs, and I'll look forward to seeing you at Stitches West.
Absolutely. I'll be there. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was the fascinating Babs Osherman. You can keep up with what she and the team at Miss Babs are up to at missbabs.com. I'm going to encourage you to all jump up there and sign up for that e-newsletter and maybe even go over and like the Miss Babs Hand-Dyed Yarns and Fibers Facebook page. They tend to have some cool stuff happening, and these are the ways that you find out about that stuff. So if you don't want to miss something, you should go do that now. Okay, so you know what time it is.
And now it's time for State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
I'd like to welcome back the moderator of our... You just can't stop yourself, can you, Tim? I'd like to welcome back the moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group and Fiber Hooligans Facebook group and host of State of the Hooligan to tell us about what's new and cool in the fiber arts world, our roving virtual reporter, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us from Boise, Idaho this morning and not on cue. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
No, it's okay.
I hope everybody else is laughing with us.
Oh, I think so. I think so too. Okay. Yeah. So wasn't Babs awesome?
Yes, and I'm drooling over the yarn on the internet. I can't imagine getting to stand there and touch and feel at Stitches West and not, you know, how can you walk away from that? The colors are wonderful, and I looked at the one that you mentioned even, and it is a beautiful, I think, inspiring color set, the trio.
Yeah, well, I don't know what it is about the trios that really appeal to me, but they do, and I believe when Rick bought something at her booth down at South, it was a trio as well. I don't know what it is. I just, you know, if you cruise around, there's an awful lot of yarn to look up there.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to being overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we can manage that. So, you know, we have a contest winner from last week. It is the Ravelry Group winner for the Amy Herzog Craftsy class. Do we have a winner?
Yeah, last night before I went to bed, I put the number of the comments on the post in the Ravelry group into a random number generator that I found on the internet, and it's picked comment number 16, which is for Janie, who uses the screen name Knits on Wheels. Her comment was, I want so much to take this class. I've registered on her custom sweater site. So have to say congratulations. Happy Monday to Janie, and please send your contact information to Benjamin@fiberhooligan.com.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll be posting about that up on the Ravelry group and probably sending a private message via Ravelry as well. But congratulations, and, you know, I'll let the gang at Craftsy know. So that's very cool. So, before we get into this, I forgot to ask you, how was your week?
Well, it's cold. It must be December. I hope everybody's staying relatively warm.
Knit faster. That's right. And I understand you've got an interesting story from somewhere slightly warmer.
Yes. Everybody has probably heard of the, I don't know if it's myth or fact, of the sweater curse.
The boyfriend sweater
Wikipedia.
Curse.
The Wikipedia actually has a page about it, and it's defined as a term used by knitters to describe a belief that if a knitter gives a hand-knit sweater to a significant other, it will lead to the recipient breaking up with the knitter. The relationship will end before the sweater is even done. Our friend Steve Malcolm had a great episode where he spoke with several knitters about it back in October, and which featured his very wicked laugh. I hope everyone can take the time to check it out. It was a great episode that included stories from Lee Gant and Amy Deachin. I hope I pronounced that right.
Yeah, Amy Deachin.
The reason I wanted to spotlight that topic is because The Sweater Curse is the name of a play that was performed even up until yesterday afternoon, written by Elaine Liner. Several newspaper articles on the internet about it who are all acknowledging her day job as a theater critic. She's also a knitter and obviously a playwright. She said she found discussions online of the curse and was flooded with memories of unfinished sweaters for unfinished relationships and thought, you know, I bet I could write a one-woman play about that. So her work cited literary for, I'm tongue-tied. Literary references of Penelope knitting the shroud for Ulysses' return, and then Madame Defarge knitting in A Tale of Two Cities. People were encouraged to bring their knitting to work on while watching the play. I know that I would have, because I take my knitting to the movies. So I think that sounds like it would have been a lot of fun.
I think so too. Are there any? Did you find any YouTube clips for anything from the play, or is that still kind of offline?
I looked. I even tried to get a hold of her, but I haven't been able to yet. So, if I can find anything, though, I will post it in the Ravelry group.
Well, I like plays, and it sounds like a kind of a fun thing. So, yeah, post the link that we have to that. And this is a Dallas resident?
Yes. This all took place in Dallas, so hopefully some of our listeners, friends that we have in Dallas area, have been to it and can tell us all about what they thought about it, too.
Yeah, okay, Fiber Hooligans, I'm putting a call out. For anybody in the Dallas area that actually saw this play, please send me an email, benjamin@fiberhooligan.com, because I want to hear more about this and I want to hear your experience with this. Okay. So, that's a great segment. Any big plans coming up this week?
Nope, just the usual in mid-December. Scramble.
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, I'll let you get going, and thank you for another great report, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again next Monday.
Yes, we'll see you then. I'm looking forward to it. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. Bye. That was Tammy Burke, host of State of the Hooligan and moderator of our Facebook and Ravelry groups, Fiber Hooligans. For those of you who have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us on one of our groups. Tammy does a great job of making sure we answer questions, provide links, and follow up to anything you might have heard on the show. Next week, I actually have a real treat for you. My very special guest will be my very own father, David Xenakis, one of the founders and one of the exes in XRX. David has been retired from the industry for almost 7 years now, so many of you who knew him from the old days probably haven't heard from him in quite some time. Well, here's a chance to catch up. For those of you who don't know his story, you have no idea just how cool it and he really is. And for those of you who have never heard him speak, all I can say is if you like my voice, his velvety tones put my voice to shame. I swear I could sell classes at Stitches of David just reading the phone book. He is truly a Renaissance man, classical pianist, composer, mathematician, graphics expert, computer geek, author, master weaver, entrepreneur, and a man that fills the room with his poise and presence. Please trust me when I tell you, you do not want to miss this show. Okay, I want to make sure that you all know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email or comment on the podcast. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligan.